Welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. Tonight, I want to begin by asking a question. And this is a question that is directed specifically to those of us here who are consciously trying to follow Jesus, who mean to be disciples. Now, I want to say this. There might be some here who are not, and that's okay. If you're here and you're not sure about following Jesus or not, or whether you mean to follow him, or what you even believe about him, there are some who are here who are in that place, and you're totally welcome here, and I'm very thankful that you're here. I think it would be good for you, if you're in that position, to pay attention tonight and sort of oversee what some of the things that are at the heart of what Christians believe are. It would be good for you to do that. But this question is for those of us here who are trying to follow Jesus. And this is the question, and I want you to take this seriously. Have you ever noticed how easy it is to deny Jesus with your actions? Have you ever decided, I am going to be a follower of Jesus, and then been shocked to see how quickly you're going on a path that leads away from him rather than after him? Can anyone who's a disciple acknowledge that they've experienced that? Maybe by raising your hand a little bit. Some of us have felt that, haven't we? That you make a decision. I am going to set out to follow Jesus. I'm going to do the things he says and be the man and be the woman that he wants me to be. And then it's not but a moment later that you're looking at yourself dazed and confused at how you could be so unlike the person he wants you to be. Has anyone here ever experienced that? Yeah? Why? Now, I don't want you to give out the answer, but this is the question that we're going to look at tonight. How is it that someone who makes a choice and is serious about following Jesus can go from one moment being a dedicated and honest and true follower of his to the next denying him? How does that happen? Now, this is how we're going to get to this question. And those of you who have been here before tonight know that we're in the midst of a series. We're on our third sermon tonight that's leading us up to Easter in a series that I've called From Gethsemane to Golgotha. The first week that we did this sermon, we looked at together the prayer that Jesus offered to God in Gethsemane. That was 2 weeks ago. Last week, week two, we looked together at the moments after the prayer in which Jesus was betrayed by Judas and then arrested by the crowd. Now, those of you who were here last week, hopefully you recall that the end of that scene, do you remember how it ended? After Judas betrayed Jesus and after Jesus was arrested, does anyone remember the very last line in that scene? All of the disciples did what? They fled. Now, this was a group of people, all of whom had decided to follow Jesus. And their decisions were real because they left, a lot of them, their careers and their families and everything behind, and they followed him for 3 years. And then, in the scene we looked at last week, they all turned and ran. Why? How is it that a group that could be so serious about this man Jesus one moment could the very next turn and run away? Now, this is a question that is interesting when we look at them, but it's also meaningful for us, for those of us here who mean to follow Jesus. Because the truth is, each one of us who does set out to follow him will, at one time or another, find ourselves turning and running. And the way we're going to get some insight into how this works is by doing the sermon for tonight, our third week. We're going to look at the next scene in this drama, which is one disciple called Peter and his denial of Jesus. How this one man can go from a dedicated follower to a denier. Now, I want you to take a look at this. This is a picture that was painted by Caravaggio, the 17th century Italian painter. We're going to look at it again later with the lights off. Jared, you can leave them on for now. In this scene, and you'll see it more clearly later, the three figures here, there's a soldier, there's a young woman, and then this man is depicted as Peter. In the scene that we're going to look at tonight, we will see this man, Peter, denying Jesus. And let me tell you why we're going to look at it. Why I think it matters that those of us who are here, who are trying to follow Christ, why we take time to ask the question, how is it that someone can go from a follower to a denier? Now listen. What the world needs is followers of Christ who are not afraid to stand up for what they believe and who are honest about their faith. What happens so frequently in this world that we live in is that people who call themselves Christians, and this includes those of us who are here tonight, includes me too, who say that we're his disciple one moment, but then the next moment we're turning away from him and denying him. And the impact of that on the world is that it confirms the suspicions that so many people outside of the churches have, that there's nothing to this Christianity. It's just a sham and a lie. And because of that, it's worthwhile for us to gain some insight on how this works. There's another reason. And it's more personal. The truth is that every time any one of us turns away from Jesus and denies him, do you know what it does to our heart? It kills it just a little bit more. And is there anyone in here who couldn't use a little strengthening for their heart? Is there? This is what we're going to look at in this story of Peter. There's three things we're going to focus on. We're going to look at the origin, the development, and the consequences of denial. What I mean by the origin is, how does it start? How does a person get to the point where they make a denial like this? What I mean by the development is, what is there some dynamic that unfolds when a person becomes a denier? They don't deny all at once. Is there some progression? And then the third thing I want to look at with you is, what are the consequences when someone denies this Jesus? All right, let's get right into it. We're going to start with the origin of denial. And this is where I want you to grab your Bibles and open up to Matthew chapter 26. This is the chapter that we've spent our last two weeks in. We'll spend tonight here as well. And then we'll continue on later. The origin of denial. Find verse 69. And in these Bibles that we placed out there, you'll see a heading that says Peter's denial of Jesus. Before we read it, there's some information that I have to give you that is absolutely crucial. It's simple, but it's crucial. Listen. This night, the very night on which this scene unfolds, there's a few other things that have happened that are important. Jesus was arrested, and as I said, all of the disciples fled. Now, after the disciples fled, Jesus was taken to the house of the high priest. And he was brought there for a purpose. He was going to be put on trial. While Jesus was being taken there, one of the disciples who fled decides to stop running away and follow Jesus at a distance. He gets in with the crowd and begins to walk along with this crowd that heads over to Pilate's house. And this one disciple stays off. He doesn't go in where Jesus is being tried, but he stays off in the distance because he wants to see what's going to happen. Do you know who that is? That's Peter. Do you see the scene? Jesus has been arrested and taken, and he's on trial now. And now there's this other disciple who's off in the distance watching to see what unfolds, and his name is Peter. Now, before we read what happens, does anybody know who Peter is? Just a brief background. Peter was a fisherman, a professional fisherman. His name was Simon. And one day while he was fishing, Jesus had come to him and said, "You are going to follow me." And he was so compelling, Jesus. Do you know what Simon did? He dropped his nets. He left the family fishing business behind. And he went and he followed Jesus. And Jesus took this man, Simon, and he changed his name from Simon to Peter. Anybody know what the word Peter means in Greek? Petros? Rock. Jesus was a rabbi, in a way, and one of the practices of rabbis was when they had a student who showed a lot of promise, they would change that student's name. And the name they used was significant. It was symbolic. It was meant to symbolize something that the teacher saw in the student. So when Jesus changed this young man Simon's name from Simon to Peter, he was saying, "I see something in you." Do you know what he saw in him? Strength. He saw power. He saw someone who was strong. In fact, if you look at the rest of the stories about Jesus or Peter, you see that he's one of the strong. He's the strongest. He's the strongest disciple. Do you know there's only two human beings we read about who walk on water? One is Jesus and the other is Peter. The very night that this scene happens, which we're going to read, the very night was the last meal that Jesus ever had with his disciples. And that night Jesus said, "You're all going to betray me." Guess which disciple spoke up and said never? Peter, the rock, because he was strong. Then Jesus turned and looked at this rock and he said, you not only will betray me or run away, but three times before the cock crows tonight, you will deny me. And do you know what Peter says? I die first. I would lay my life down with you and die before I deny you. That's the guy who's sitting in the courtyard watching what's going to happen. Got it? Let's see what happens. Look at verse 69. Now, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard. A servant girl came to him and said, "You also were with Jesus, the Galilean." But he denied it before all of them, saying, "I do not know what you are talking about." When he went out to the porch, another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." Again, he denied it with an oath, "I do not know the man." After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, "Certainly you are also one of them, for your accent betrays you." Then he began to curse, and he swore an oath, "I do not know the man." At that moment, the cock crowed. Then Peter remembered what Jesus had said, "Before the cock crows, you will deny me three times." And he went out and he wept bitterly. How could he do this? He had the food that he had eaten from that supper was still in his body. The very supper where he promised he would never deny Jesus. How did this happen? How could he go from this dedicated man to this liar in just a few hours? Now there are answers. There's an answer to that question. And I want all of us to see it for a reason. If we see it, I believe that we are less likely ourselves to become deniers like this. There's a reason why this story is in Scripture. It's to help teach us something that we need to know. Now, I want you to, with me, pay attention to a few of the details in this scene. And I have some artwork to help. And I'm going to ask Jared if he would shut off the lights for a moment. I want you to visualize this scene with me. And this is what's going on. This is my question. In this scene that we just read, who's on trial? Jesus is on trial inside the high priest's house. This is a beautiful painting by Gerrit von Hornforst. This was a student of Caravaggio's, the man we've been looking at some of his paintings. While this story is going on, at the same time, and this matters, at the same time there is a trial going on. And it's a trial where Jesus is being questioned by this man. This is the high priest. And these men here, you see, these are the scribes and the Pharisees, the religious leaders, who have reason to think that Jesus is a tremendous threat. And so while this story is unfolding, this is going on. There is a trial in which Jesus is on trial. Now, I want you to notice this other thing. Is this the only trial going on in this moment? No? What's the other trial happening? Because inside the high priest's house, there's one trial going on, and the jury is the high priest and the scribes and the Pharisees. But at the same time, at the very same time, outside in the courtyard, there is another trial going on. And it is the trial of Peter. And this is also a painting by the same artist. Here we see the depiction of Peter, who is being questioned by this jury, which is made up of a young woman and another one here, and then some bystanders. This is very important. This is the first fact that we all must see, that in this story, there are two trials that are happening at the same time. The one trial is the trial that's going on the inside, which is where Jesus is being questioned and responding. And then the other is the one that's going on the outside, where Peter is on trial. Now, I will tell you, there are some amazing parallels and contrasts in these two trials. There's a lot of stuff going on. If you want to spend some time thinking through how different the trials unfold, how different the key questioners are, and so on, it would be very instructive. But the thing that you must see here is that Peter is on trial. You got that? Here's the second thing that I want you to know. And this is a painting by Caravaggio himself. This is the one that we started with. This is the second fact about this. Here in his depiction, we just have this one servant woman, and we have this man who is the bystander, and this is Peter. Now, I want to ask you to pay attention, because the artist was intentional here. How many fingers do you see pointing at Peter, aside from his own? There are three. Did someone say three? Now, this is so important. The artist did this for a reason. If you can see now, if you look down at your Bible, you'll see in verse 70, we have the first time he's questioned. "Do you know this man?" And he says, "No." Then we have down in verse 72, a second time when he's questioned. And again, he says, "No." And then further on, In verse 74, we have a third time that he's questioned. So in this trial, how many times is Peter questioned? Now this may seem nitpicky, but this matters immensely. There's a reason why this number 3 is here. Now I want you to listen. This would be a lot more apparent if our sermons were not separated by a week. Okay, can you imagine this? You know, last week I preached too long. It was like 40 minutes. Can you imagine like hours of this? It would be hard. But if you read right through from the supper up to this scene, you would see that this is not the first time that a disciple fails 3 times in a row. You would know that between the supper, when Peter made this claim, "I will never deny you, I will die first," and this moment where he is in fact denying him 3 times, there's another time where Peter fails 3 times in a row. And the truth is, if you see his first 3 failures, you will see the origins of his failures here, the origins of his denial. Does anyone remember what other 3 failures happened in between the supper and this moment? What happened in Gethsemane 3 times? Look, this is a picture that depicts Jesus returning. 3 times, Jesus came back to the disciples and they fell asleep. Jared, would you grab the lights real quick? 3 times he told them to pray, and 3 times in a row they fell asleep. And I want you to look at what it says in verse 41. Because this tells us the origin of this particular denial for Peter. Verse 41, this is what Jesus said to Peter that same night, 3 times. "Stay awake and pray that you may not come into the time of trial." Now I want everyone to hear this. It's important, and we can miss this and lose a lot if we did. The way that a disciple avoids falling when they're on trial is not by mustering up their own strength. A lot of us think that what it means to be a good disciple is to reach deep down inside and get the strength from ourselves to do the right thing. Over and over again, we think that that's what we're supposed to do. The reason that Peter failed here is not because he didn't have enough strength. It's because he did not ask God for the strength that he would need to stand in the time of trial. And the lesson for us as disciples is simple. It's this. If any one of us here would like to make progress as being a person who genuinely follows Jesus rather than denying him, what we need to learn to do, it's very simple. Pray for his help. That's it. And listen now, all of you know that there are trials that you face. They're different for each person. For some of you, the trial is some substance that you're addicted to, some substance. Maybe it's some activity that you keep getting yourself involved in that you know you shouldn't. Maybe it's very grim, and it would be embarrassing to talk about it in church. Maybe it's very mundane, but you know it eats your heart out inside. All of us face trials over and over again where we're tempted to deny Jesus. And this first lesson for us is that the origin of our failures is that we forget to rely on God and his strength. Do you know how much strength God has? All the strength. Do you know that God is not greedy with his strength but wants to give it to his people? He wants us to come to him and say these simple words, "God help me." And I'll tell you this, you try this. The next time you wake up, tomorrow morning, when you get up and you think, "Oh, here are the trials that I'm going to face today." Just start by saying, "God, I need your help." It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be a long prayer. It doesn't have to have all the right words. It just has to say, "God, help me today." And I'll tell you, if we start doing this, all of us as a group, "God, help me today with my greed. Help me today with my arrogance. Help me today with the way I push other people away who are different than me. Help me with my judgmental qualities." All of these things. If we would start praying like that, we would be on our way to triumph over the ways we deny Jesus. And that would be good for us, but also for the world. And that's the first thing I see in this story. Is it a good thing to see? All right. Let's go on to the second thing that I want us to look at, the development. Because the fact is, and this is also simple, but it's profound. The fact is, Peter doesn't deny Jesus all at once. There's a development. And this is how it works with the times in which we deny Jesus. Do you know what I mean by development? Does anyone start off being like the most heinous, awful person in the world? Is that how it begins? It just starts little, right? Some of you know what this is like. You know that there's this problem that you had, and so you tell yourself, "I won't do that, but I'll just do this." And then later, what happens? "I'll do this," and so on. You know what I mean? I want you to look at the text with me. We'll see it here in the text. All right. The first time that Peter is confronted with this challenge of whether he knows Jesus, I want you to notice how he responds. Now, this is in verse 70. Remember, a young woman comes out, says to him, "I think you were with Jesus." And look at his response. "I do not know what you are talking about." Now, if we look at this response in the strictest sense, is it a denial? I mean, did he really deny anything? Look at that. He doesn't mention Jesus. He doesn't say anything about his relationship to Jesus. He just says, "I'm not sure I know what you're talking about." This really isn't a denial, is it? It's more of an evasion. Anyone ever do this? Do you? Like, I'm in the living room reading a book, and I'm enjoying it. And Michelle's in the kitchen cleaning up, and she says, "Christian, could you help me by taking out the garbage?" And I say, "I'm not sure I heard you." Or maybe I'm more sophisticated. "I don't know what you mean by taking out. Do you want me to go out on a date with the garbage?" Or I evade. And listen now. Here, he's being a weasel. And it's not that bad. I mean, listen. If this is as far as it went, I want you to think of this. If this is as far as it went, if that was the last time he was questioned, let's just use our imaginations for a moment. Let's say this is all that happens. Later that evening or that morning, the next morning, Jesus sees Peter again and says something like this: "Peter, why didn't you say that you knew me when that woman asked?" Peter could honestly say, "Well, I didn't deny that I knew you. I wasn't sure exactly what the woman meant when she asked. That's all." And he would be, you know, that's at least within the bounds of possible, isn't it? That's the first step. That's how it begins. It starts with something that's really not that bad. Now, that's not where it ends, is it? And you know what? That's never where it ends. And this is a lesson for all of us who are tempted in one way or another to deny Jesus. You may start with just a tiny little evasion of what he calls you to, or what's good for you, or what you know is right, by just doing a little bit of what's wrong. But it never stops there. That's not how sin works. Because it begins like that, but then it develops. Now I want you to look further down. After this one woman asks, then there's another one who comes, and she also says the same sort of thing. "Don't you know Jesus? Aren't you with him?" Now look at how he responds on the second time. "I do not know the man." Now this is considerably different than the first time, isn't it? Now, he's making a direct reference to the question that was asked. And he's also making a direct denial. He went from just a slight evasion to a true denial. "No, I don't know the man." He has gone from being an evasive person to a liar. Notice he didn't start like this, but that's where he goes second. And not only does he lie, if you look before it, he actually makes an oath. He, in order to try to make it convincing, because maybe he's getting nervous, he actually puts an oath out there to say, "I don't know the man, and I swear by him." Now, he is denying Jesus with his mouth. Do you see? This is a little aside. He's also denying Jesus with his actions here. Anyone heard of the Sermon on the Mount? Peter was there when it was preached. He didn't have to read it. He heard it with his own ears. Do you know what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount about doing things like this? He told his disciples very clearly, "When someone asks you a question, let your yes be a yes and your no be a no. Don't make oaths. Anything more than yes, yes, or no, no, comes from the evil one. Don't do it." So Peter here is denying Jesus with his words, but also with his actions. And in an ironic way, it's sort of true that he doesn't know Jesus. Because a man who knew Jesus would not have anything to fear with the questioning of this sort. A man who knew Jesus would just say, "Yes, I know him," and accept whatever consequences come. But here, Peter has gone from an evasive person to a liar who's disobedient to Jesus. Look how it ends up. A third time he gets pursued, this time by a larger group of people. And now, not only is he saying, "I don't know the man," not only is he making an oath, but he's cursing, it says. He began to curse. Now, listen. This does not mean that he said a nasty four-letter word. Okay? That's not what it means. I see some people who want to chuckle. You giggle. To curse, in this regard, could mean two things. It either could mean, if the verb curse here is intransitive, and this is a grammar nugget for those of you who like grammar. If it's intransitive, that means it does not take a... somebody? Direct object. If the verb is intransitive, it does not take a direct object, and in that case, the curse is Peter saying something like this: I swear I don't know the man, and if it's not true, may I be cursed. As if he's saying, I'm so confident that I don't know him, and I'm so not afraid to say that I will be cursed if I do. Do you know what? That's actually a very unlikely translation of this. Because grammatically speaking in Greek, it's very, very unlikely that it's intransitive. The verb curse is almost definitely transitive, which means it takes a direct object. And guess who the direct object is? Jesus. Peter is saying, I don't know the man, and I swear it, and I curse him if I know him. How? Do you see this? How dreadful this is that Peter could do this? This is a lesson. It's simple. You see these three things. It starts small and it gets bigger. And this is a simple dynamic of denial. Denial progresses from evasion to full-blown cursing of Christ. And there is teaching about this dynamic all over the Bible. It's taught in stories in the Old Testament where we see someone start down a road that ends up disastrously for them. It's taught directly in the book of James. If there's someone taking notes and you want to look at this yourself later, look up James chapter 1, verse 14 through 16. There James puts it like this. He says, we start with some desire and we fixate on it. And when we start ruminating on that desire and then give in to that temptation, there's something that gets conceived. And do you know what gets conceived, he says? It's like we have a desire, we think about it a lot, and now there's some conception. It's a baby. And you know what's inside of that desire? Sin. That baby, that sin will be born, and it will start little, but that sin grows and gets bigger and bigger until it also conceives. And guess what it gives birth to? Death. What starts as desire that's not right leads to sin, which goes to death. And so it is with every sin that we're tempted to when it comes to denial. That we would start on something that's not such a big deal. And we don't believe it will lead where it does. But it leads there. And where it leads is death. Now, what is the lesson for us as disciples? It's this. That if we will start growing in our ability to withstand the temptations that we'll face by asking God for help, when we get to the time of trial, we must not make the mistake of thinking that little things don't matter. It's very easy to rationalize and say, no, I'm okay because I've never murdered anyone, or etc. It's not like that. It's not how it starts. And this is how denial progresses. Now, I want to bring us to one last lesson, and this one, to me, is the most important. What are the consequences of denial? What happens when we deny Jesus? Now, there are two very plain, immediate consequences to Peter's denial. I'll ask you to help me with the first one. What do you think the consequences of Peter's denial are for the rest of the people in this scene? Think of that for a moment. The young woman, and then the other young woman, and the bystanders. Does it matter to them that Peter doesn't say that he knows Jesus? Think of this for a moment. Maybe, and this is not a stretch, I think, maybe that young woman wants to know about Jesus because she's interested in whether it would be a good idea to follow him. Maybe she saw something in the courage of this man who's been accused and is now on trial in that room that was compelling to her, and she thought, I would like to talk to somebody who knows that guy because maybe I could follow him. And so, when Peter is unwilling to say, yes, I know him, he deprives her of that possibility that she would learn something good about Jesus that would be good for her. And this is a very, very plain thing to me. Every time any one of us who is a follower of his pretends before others that we're not, we may be cutting them off from the possibility of learning something about him that would be good for them. This is a reason for each one of us to take responsibility for our actions, that others outside would see something true rather than something false. And maybe this woman went off disenchanted after encountering Peter, saying, ah, I suspected it all along. Jesus was just another rabble-rouser. His followers are a bunch of hypocrites, just like all the followers of every other religious guy, and I'm not going to have anything to do with it. That's one immediate consequence. There's an immediate consequence that exists for Peter. Did anybody see what that was? Watch this. When Peter begins, look up here. Where is he when he begins? He's sitting outside in the courtyard. The courtyard was immediately adjacent to the house. It was very close to where the trial was, so he could see easily. That's where he is when it starts. A woman comes up and asks him. He denies Jesus. He denies Jesus, and look where he goes. Next, he goes out to the porch. Do you know the difference between the courtyard and the porch in relation to Jesus? Further away. He starts a little bit away from Jesus. He denies him, and he goes a little further. Then he's questioned once, and then another time, and then look what happens. Then he goes from the porch out once again, weeping bitterly into the darkness of the night. And in that place, he's all alone. And this is it. It's very simple. When we deny Jesus, the other immediate consequence is that we put distance between us and him. Has anyone ever experienced this? Yourself, when you do something that you know is wrong, and the consequence is that now you're further from Jesus. You've experienced that? I know there are folks who experience this, the distance that sometimes life has for us and God, and they wonder, why did God go away from me? And I would add this. There are times when God, I believe, intentionally makes it harder for us to sense his presence. I believe that. As a way of teaching us and developing us and making us grow so that we're not dependent always on our emotional highs for believing in him. That happens often. But every time any one of us denies Jesus, the other immediate consequence is that we put more and more distance between ourselves and him. And we can see it very plainly in Peter. As he starts in the courtyard and then goes to the porch and then eventually ends up all the way out in the darkness in the night by himself, weeping his eyes out, he teaches us that denial brings you further and further from Christ. That's the other immediate consequence. Now, there's one other thing that I must add, and it is this. That the Scriptures teach that there are not only immediate consequences for our denying Christ, but there are long-term, eternal consequences. That is to say, that Scripture teaches us that to deny Christ has consequences not only now, but forever. Listen, this comes from the words of Jesus himself. In that sermon that I alluded to earlier, the one where he spoke on the Mount, the Sermon on the Mount, where he taught the disciples not to curse and swear. Do you know what else he talked about in that sermon? He talked about prayer. He talked about poverty and riches. He talked about lust and adultery and divorce. He talked about a lot of things in that prayer. You know what else in that sermon? Do you know what else he talked about in that sermon? He talked about denial. This was the sermon that Peter himself would have heard with his own ears. And this is what Jesus said in that Sermon on the Mount, which is in the book of Matthew, in these, right here, 10:32-33. This is what he says. He says, "Everyone who acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I will also deny before my Father in heaven." That's pretty clear, isn't it? Peter heard Jesus say this. Look again at what it says in the text that we're looking at. He denied it before all of them. Now, I want you to understand, this is not unclear in the Bible. That word, before, that's a little preposition in Greek, usually. In this text, it's an odd form of the word before. It's emphrosthen. It's a very odd form of that preposition. It is exactly the same form that is used in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says there, "Anyone who denies me, emphrosthen others, I will deny him before my heavenly Father." And here, the text reads very clearly. He, Peter, denied it before, emphrosthen, all of them. Does this raise a question about Peter for us? Listen, last week, I talked about Judas. Some of you were here. Do you remember that? I said that Jesus met Judas the betrayer, and the first word out of Jesus' mouth to Judas, right as he was betraying him, do you remember what it was? Friend. And I said that Jesus' grace was for Judas. Remember that? After the service, someone approached me. And it was a man. He said, "I'm not going to be here when you preach about Judas, because that's the next sermon I'm going to preach is about Judas." He said, "I'm not going to be here, but I have a question for you. Do you think Judas is in hell? See, he heard me preach, and he heard the things I was saying about grace. I didn't say where I thought Judas was. I did say what I thought about God's grace for all of us. And he asked me that question, and I believe a part of the impulse for his question was, what does this pastor think about hell? Is he soft on the subject? Is he afraid to tell his people what will happen if they deny God forever? It's sort of a litmus test. What do you think about Judas? You say he's not in hell, then you can't really believe in the Bible. I'm not sure that was his motive. I've had that question asked of me in that way before. But when he asked me that, I didn't have time to get into it. But if he were here tonight, this is what I would say to him. You know what's an equally pressing question that we should ask? Not what happens to Judas, but what happens to Peter? Because here is the guy who said, Judas didn't say this, this is the guy who said he would die before he denied Jesus. And this is the guy who heard the words out of Jesus' mouth himself, saying, you deny me, and I'll deny you before my heavenly Father. And yet, he's denying Jesus right in the garden. What about Peter? Shouldn't we ask what happens to him? Is there any chance that Peter will get forgiveness? Is there? If we follow the line of reasoning that says Judas has to be in hell, we have to say, well, he has to follow Peter in. Because look what Peter did here. Now listen to me. And this is the lesson that comes from this scene that I think is the most powerful and pertinent message. It's true that Peter denies Jesus. That Peter begins by failing to pray. And so he doesn't have the divine strength to stand up in the time of trial. It's true that three times over, Peter denies Jesus. And in so doing, he makes himself further and further and further from Jesus. It's true that he did the thing that Jesus said would make it so that in eternity, he would be separated from God. It's true. All those things are true. But when it comes to asking about Peter's future, do you know we don't have to speculate? There's actually some information about what happens with Peter after this scene. Do you know who preaches the first sermon after Jesus is raised in the New Testament? To the effect that 3,000 people become Christians on that very day. Do you know who the preacher was that day? Does anybody know? It was Peter. It's in Acts chapter 2. Do you know who, according to Luke, is the first apostle to see the risen Jesus face to face? Do you know who it is? It's Peter. Does anyone know the story that John records for us of Peter's conversation with Jesus? Listen, this scene teaches us the depths of God's grace and love for failures, for people who are deniers, for people who would sit in a church like this tonight hoping that the sermon would end because it makes them too uncomfortable when they think about the ways that they have denied Jesus. This scene says to people like that, you are not deeper than God's grace and love and forgiveness. No matter if you sink as deep as Peter does, God's grace sinks even deeper. And that is true for every one of you in here tonight who is currently a denier of Jesus. This is a passage from the book of Romans that I think puts it very succinctly. It's in chapter 5, verse 20. It says, where sin increased, grace abounded all the more. And that means, this is what that means, if you have a scale, and on the one side, you put all of the rotten sins that you've committed, all of the ways you've denied Jesus, every way you've turned away from him and faked it, every time you've denied him before others, if you put that on one side of the scale, and then on the other side of the scale, you put God's grace, guess which one weighs more? Guess which one matters more? It's grace. This is not just the message of one single verse of the Bible. It's the message of the life of the man we've seen tonight with our own eyes, denying Jesus. And that means this for every one of you who's here who feels guilty about some way you've denied Jesus. Because I know a lot of you feel guilty. I know a lot of you carry burdens of sorrow for the ways that you failed. It means that God's grace abounds more than that sin. And it also means this, that you, in your denial of Jesus, have not made yourself useless to him. Because if that were true, it couldn't possibly be so that Peter preached such an effective sermon in Acts chapter 2. It means that there is boundless hope for every lost sinner. Boundless. There's no limit to the love and the grace of God for those of us who turn away from him. And that, there's only two words for that. Good news. Let's pray together.